I'm sitting here in a park with Kristen Gitte. Kristen is a university student and lives in Guelph. Kristen, would you like to share with listeners your experiences at the protests against the G20 agendas this past late June?
Sure. I was in Toronto Thursday to Sunday night. I went down specifically for OCAP's rally on Ontario Coalition Against Poverty's rally on Friday, Justice for Our Communities, and then to help set up a tent city on Friday night. Yeah, it was a great day from my perspective. There were some things that I heard about once we got back to tent city that night, but there were thousands of people on the streets, you know, lots of messages out there, a lot of great people. I didn't see much happen on Friday beyond, you know, just having a great day on the streets. And then we got back to Tent City. We established Tent City. There was live music. We had folks who generally call Allen Park their home for the evening come up to us and thank us for being there and asking us to come back, which I wish that we could do. And yeah, Friday was a great night. And then we set out for Queen's Park on Saturday morning for the Labour rally. And immediately leaving Queen's Park, there was police force absolutely everywhere. And any time my friends had decided that we wanted to not get gassed, so any time we saw the police put on their gas masks, we retreated essentially and tried to get away from anything nasty that might happen. We had managed to stay away from all the crap that you see on TV and actually experienced what protests are supposed to be like. It was a gorgeous day from our perspective. Just, again, thousands of people on the streets, no cars on the streets. You could smell the flowers and, like, birds chirping, and it's just not the Toronto that you thought was going to be Toronto. And then in late afternoon sometime, when everything had quieted down, we decided that we wanted to go see the fence because we had been blocked all day from actually getting down to the fence. So we got down to Bay in Front, I think it was. I mean, we're just kind of sitting on the street. There was a small little protest down there. There were girls dancing and some small little chants. We had snacks on the street. It was good. And then we decided that we wanted to walk down Yonge Street and see what had happened during the day on Yonge Street. And when we got to Bay and Yonge, there was a young man, a visible minority, sitting on the corner in handcuffs behind his back with no one that we had seen that would be with him around. So our group stopped and asked him if he knew why he was being arrested, if he needed help or anything. He had said that he hadn't been read his rights, hadn't been told why he was arrested. So we called the arrest line for him and reported that he was being arrested and hit the situation. And then there were some folks standing behind him. And we thought that they were originally spectators, but after we started talking to them, we had realized that they had witnessed his arrest. And he had a Palestinian headscarf either around his face or on his head. I'm not sure because I wasn't there. And from what we were told, the police officer who had placed him under arrest had told him to get his turban off his face and ripped it off, and then placed him under arrest for that. And we decided that we needed to stay to make sure that, well, we knew that he wasn't going to be released then, so we wanted to make sure that the rest of his illegal detention was done properly. So we stayed and we watched. Fortunately, I think because we stayed, they did all the processing on the street. They took his picture on the street. They did his complete booking on the street. And after coming home, he was released on Sunday. Breach of the peace is what he was released for. So he was in jail for over a day. That took about an hour. After we left him, we got down another block, north on Yonge, and we ran into a homeless man who had just been given a $70 ticket for panhandling. The police officers who had given him the ticket were sitting in their cruiser. So one of my friends went over because their windows were down and asked them why they were harassing this man while there were cop cars literally burning a block west of us. And they just rolled up their windows and drove away. So we sat and we talked to this man for a while. We learned that he has over $22,000 worth of fines, which obviously he can't pay because he's on the streets. He had just had surgery on his stomach. His stomach acid had eaten through the lining and had gone into his intestines, so he had just come out of surgery from that, and he was really bloated and in a lot of pain. So we gave him what money we could and gave him OCAP's information because they, you know, work with street folk, and told him to have a good day and told him that it was messed up that he got a ticket. And we continued north on Yonge Street, and we were trying to get onto the subway line because we had been on the streets for over 12 hours that day, and we just wanted to go home and, you know, sit down and have some food. And I don't remember what street it was, but we had gotten up another block from where that homeless man was, and there was a young boy, probably early teens, who had two bikes and had hopped up on the sidewalk. And we were kind of joking around with him about, oh, it's really, you know, cool that you've got two bikes. It takes a lot of skill to have two bikes. And then he says, no, my buddy just got shot. And we're obviously like, what? And him and his friends were biking home and had got caught up in a protest that had been attacked by the police. And they had stopped just to kind of observe, as any human being would. And he looked back for seconds, and his friend was on the ground with police officers tackling him and taking him in. He wasn't comfortable with us calling in his friend's arrest, but we gave him the arrest line as well and the friends and family info line. And we walked with him for a little bit north on Yonge Street, but he was on a bike, so he was a little bit faster than we were, and he's obviously a little upset, so he wanted to get home. And then we got another block north, and there was a woman and a man sitting on the corner. Presumably, they were both homeless, and the man was tapping the woman's face, yelling her name. I don't remember what her name was, unfortunately. So I asked if she was all right. And he looked up and said, I don't know, she got beat up earlier today and has done some very bad stuff. I think that might be drugs, but I don't want to put words in people's mouths. Mm-hmm. She was unconscious. One of my friends is a medic, I guess, trained in CPR. So I tried to find her pulse, I couldn't find it. So he immediately got out his resuscitating mask and his gloves, and a few of us got her lying down on the ground so that he could actually do CPR. Another one of my friends called 911, and then once he got himself all sanitary and ready to help her, he managed to find a pulse, and luckily there was an ambulance just around the corner. Another one of my friends went and got the ambulance. Thankfully it was open, so they came out and they took her, and we got her in the ambulance. And then we decided to continue north again on our travel, and this is all in like a matter of an hour and a half, 2 hours that this happened.
Oh, wow.
This is all Saturday, late afternoon, early evening, I'm not sure what time exactly. And then we came across a bar that had pictures of what had happened during the day, and because we had been on the streets, we hadn't seen anything. So we stopped and we were watching what was on, CP24 that it was on. And then three of my friends decided that they were hungry, so they went into a little donair shop that was right beside the bar as the rest of us stood outside and were glued to the TVs. And when they went into the donair shop, they found that there was TVs in there, so they called us inside. And then as we're watching TV and eating food, the caption on CP24 was, "Thousands of protesters turn off of Bloor onto Yonge Street, now making their way downtown." And then all of a sudden, like, I would assume 1,000 people just go marching by. At this point, there were, like, no cops around, which is a little bizarre. Most of the afternoon of, or, like, this time, there were, like, barely any police officers, which is a little bizarre for some of the stories that are out there. It was nice that you could just walk around feeling completely safe. And then after that march went by, like, we stood out on the sidewalk and cheered. Then we got on the subway. A couple of my friends went to the Convergence space, and then I went back to where I was staying for the weekend with another friend. And then my friends who went to the Convergence space came back to where we were all staying. We got on the internet, and I had found out that there was jail solidarity the next morning, meeting at Jimmy Simpson's Park for the folks who were arrested on Saturday. And we decided that this was going to be something that we had to do. So we went to bed and woke up early, you know, had a nice little communal breakfast, and then headed down to Jimmy Simpson Park. Probably about 10:30 we arrived. When we first got there, there was more media there than there were demonstrators, which seemed to be common. But then as time, probably about a half hour, 45 minutes went by, there were about, I would say, 150, 200 people there. And when it was time to leave, I don't remember the organizer's name who had put together, who was like the most vocal organizer. We were told that this rally was being organized in consultation with the police, that we were to follow all their directions. If we were to be on the street, then that would be fine. If they wanted us on the sidewalk, then we needed to listen. There was to be no confrontation with the police. If there was an order for dispersal, we were to leave immediately. They said to leave in groups of two or three just for safety reasons. And all of this was completely agreed upon. We marched down to the detention center with a chant of solidarity, and that was pretty much the main chant. There was a girl with a homemade instrument that was like a flute piano thing that was beautiful, and we just like clapped along. We got down to the detention center and we paused for a little bit just to coordinate where the police wanted us to be. And then we were told that we were going to be right across the street from the detention center, but they were going to close down a street for us, and that was our space. We were told that there was a crosswalk white line on the street. We were not to pass that. If we were to pass that, that would be breaking the rules of this demonstration. I went down with three people. One of my friends wrote "Free all political prisoners" in chalk on the road. And then the three of us decided to sit down on the front lines. And then folks behind us had started drawing art around what he had written. So there were birds and sun, and it was quite nice. And we had seen probably about three prisoners released. And the crowd was really excited, obviously, to have people coming out of the detention center. We had just been told that there was food and water on the way, and that there was transportation available for these folks, because obviously they are just getting out of jail and, you know, have had a pretty rough time. So one of the last prisoner that we saw released was asking for transportation, and my friend got up to go find him transportation. And because we thought we were in a safe space, we let him go by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then minutes later, two unmarked police vehicles, or two unmarked vans, come in. And plainclothes officers wearing Kevlar vests and with telescope batons came into the crowd. Originally, I didn't really think that they were police officers, just because they weren't in uniform. To me, if you're coming in to infiltrate a crowd like that, you should be in uniform. So I thought that they were... Like, the first thought that went through my head was that they were coming to attack the police officers. And then they broke through the police line, went straight into the crowd. And my friend that was on the right, the one that hadn't got up to get transportation, immediately got up. And he's just a protective instinct, immediately got up and was trying to, I wouldn't say unarrest, but watch, I guess, what was happening. So I picked up my friend's bag who had gone to find transportation, and I moved back to the sidewalk. While I was standing on the sidewalk, I saw my protective friend get pushed down by the cops, get hit over the head with a baton, and then the police retreated again and formed their line. And I went and found the one friend who had just been beaten, essentially, and we regrouped a little bit, decided that our other friend, who we didn't know where he was, he would come back and he would find us. So we sat down again on the front lines. This time we linked arms and we were chanting, "We're peaceful, how about you?" To the police officers. And then I didn't see them come in, but they either came in, the police officers either came in on the far side from where we were, from the front, or they came in through an alleyway. I'm not sure which one exactly. And they did more arrests, again with no warning or order for dispersal. And because they had done this, the police officers that we were sitting in front of started pushing us back. But because we were seated, instead of asking us to move, they started kicking us.
Oh my God.
The guy that was on my right arm, who I didn't know, he was getting kicked really badly. So he couldn't stand up, so he was lying back and pulled me back at the same time. His arm was just getting tighter on my arm.
Right.
And then I was getting kicked in my right leg. I came home with bruises all around my knee.
This is so appalling.
Yeah, to say the least. And as they're kicking us, they're saying, "Get up and move back." And I looked up and I said, "I can't get up." And then one of the police officers offered a hand to me and said, "Here, I'll help you up." But just being kicked by a police officer, you don't exactly want to take their hand. So my friend that was on my left arm, he had let go and he had managed to stand up, and he made a little barrier between me and the police officers, and he managed to get me up. And once we were standing, we got pushed back against a house, again being told to move back. And once our backs were up against the wall and we were being told to move back, it was like, "Where do you want us to go?" And again, with like no response, just move back. Eventually, the police line opened up. They had like completely surrounded us against the house. Eventually, the police line had opened up and we were basically herded down the sidewalk. And just as we had broken through the cops that had surrounded us, there were two officers with a muzzle attack, less lethal weaponry, whatever that means, who shot a girl who was running away in the back at least twice. It was targeted tear gas. I inhaled some of that gas, which is, they should really give it a different name because it is not tear gas. It should be called like eat your brain gas or something, or drain your sinus gas.
How did you feel when you inhaled it? What's the after effects?
Well, it's like your sinus system just completely drains. It doesn't want anything, like there's no liquid that stays in your body, I guess. It's like your nose starts running. You feel like you want to vomit. It feels like your brain's getting eaten, if that makes any sense. It's probably not quite that drastic, like your brain's getting eaten, but it's not tear gas. It's not mm-hmm. like you're just, your eyes are watering. It's not mm-hmm. pleasant. So we, my friend, who my remaining friend, decided that we needed to get out of there. So we went down an alley, and there were a group of about 10 other people who had went down the same alley, and it led into a parking lot, the fenced-in parking lot. A few folks jumped the fence, but then they quickly re-jumped the fence because you couldn't get out that way. And there were two exits that we could get back onto the road where people were getting shot and arrested, or back onto Eastern Ave where all the police were. So we didn't want to go back onto where people were getting gassed. So we convinced a security guard to escort us off the property. We asked him if it was safe, and he was like, "Oh yeah, safe, just go out there." And they were like, "No, seriously, can you like escort us out there? Because like people are getting gassed over there." So he walked us out, and I think that was a good thing to happen, because as we were getting out, there was a line of riot cops that were kind of eyeing us a little oddly. And then we walked east on Eastern, and we came across another line of police officers, not in riot gear. I yelled at one of them, "Thank you for gassing us," to which there was no response from him, but there was a gentleman on the street who yelled back, "Thanks for destroying our city," and I said I had no part in that.
A cop who said that?
No, or it was bystander? A bystander. I said I had no part in that, but thanks for gassing us. And then by this time, that group of 10 had moved down to about a group of 5 or 6. And we walked north until we hit Queen Street, and we made some phone calls because me and my friend, we were missing a friend and had no idea where where he was. We honestly thought that we had just been separated. There was a coffee shop that we had gone to earlier in the day, so I figured that that would be the best bet to go and meet up if we had gotten separated. We never even thought that we would get separated, so we didn't designate a place to meet up if it happened. But I thought that that was the best place to go, which meant that we had to go west on Queen, and the other people that we were with just wanted to get out of the area, and the fastest and safest way to do that was to go east. So that group split up, and me and my friends were walking west on Queen. We got past Carlaw, and we noticed that there was, I think it was an animal control unit van. It might be a court services van, but it was one of those, like, white box police vans.
Mm-hmm. Where they can incarcerate people.
Yeah, a paddy wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we noticed that there was one of those that was driving kind of along with us, and then when it would get in front of us, it would pull into a parking lot and turn around and sit for a minute and then do the same thing. And it did that 2 or 3 times. And I stopped to get some water out of my bag on a park bench, and there was, we were talking about how we needed to get out of the area just because we didn't feel safe. And there was a gentleman standing on my right in bike uniform, well, not like biking gear, with one of the like white iPod headphones coming out of his ear that we had seen other police officers using as communication. And as we were walking away, my friend had said that that was a police officer. So we had that court services van or whatever it was, and then that police officer who started following us after. And then we noticed one of the police vans, the unmarked police vans, was also kind of tailing us. So we ducked into a clothing store, and I texted all of my friends and said, we're being followed on mm-hmm. Queen Street between Pape and Parliament. If you don't hear back from me in an hour, it's because we've been arrested. Please call the arrest line.
So disgusting.
And our parents. And when we walked out of the clothing shop, we decided that if we could get on TTC, we'd get on TTC. If we could hail a cab, we'd hail a cab. But we needed to keep traveling west. And immediately, once we got out of the clothing store, we got maybe 5 meters, and a uniformed police officer approached us along with 3 plainclothes police officers. My friend was taken with the 3 unmarked, the plainclothes police officers. He had our other friend's bag, that was immediately searched. Then my friend's bag was also searched. We were questioned for about an hour before they had separated us. We asked if we were being arrested or detained, to which we got a maybe. And then we asked if we were free to go. The answer was no.
They like, isolated you?
Yeah, well, the 3 plainclothes police officers were around my one male friend, and then I had the uniformed officer on me. And because they had separated us, because I had just seen someone get shot and been gassed, and we were missing our friend, I completely lost it. And there were some really nice folks who I don't think were demonstrators or protesters or anything, who saw me like visibly upset and came over and asked if I was okay. And I said,
"Were you crying?"
Yes. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and asked if I was okay. And I said, I'm being detained and I have no idea why.
Were they all male police?
Yeah, yep. They're all male police. The 3 plainclothes uniform police, they were quite large men. Just shorts and a t-shirt. Looked like they went to the gym type people.
What were they asking you?
They asked us where we were coming from, where we were going, why we were in the area, if we were from Toronto. They referred to both of us separately. Like, they asked if my friend was my boyfriend. My friend was asked what I was to him. We were asked how we knew each other. Yeah. Just, like, kind of random things with no justification either. And because, like, I was upset and I didn't want any hassle, when the officer asked me what was in my bag, I told him. I was probably a little bit more snarky than I should have been.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I had a change of clothes in my bag, and he asked me to open up my bag and show him what was in it. And I did, and I had a change of clothes in a bag, and he asked me what was in the bag, and I said that I had a bra and asked him if he wanted to see it, and didn't respond. But yeah, no, these folks that had stopped, they filmed and took pictures of what was happening, thankfully. The girl who had stopped had a lawyer friend, and she called her lawyer friend for me because the arrest line was busy. So that was amazing that they stopped, and then mm-hmm. she invited us back to her house if we got released or if we just didn't feel safe.
Did the police observe that?
Yep. Yep. He actually let me use her phone to talk to her lawyer friend.
That's surprising.
Yeah, but while I was on the phone, he refused to talk to me. So the lawyer, while I was talking to the lawyer told me to ask the police officer why I was being stopped, and he said that he couldn't talk to me while I was on the phone. So I got his number written on my arm by the woman and hung up the phone. I felt like at any moment I was going to be put in cuffs and thrown in the back of that white van. And because we were missing a friend, I felt like at any moment we would be separated and one of us would be all alone on the street or both of us would be in the back of a van. And yeah, the Civil Liberties Association, two of their people were walking by and stopped and started documenting what had happened. And I think because we had the two bystanders stop and the Civil Liberties Association stop, and because I was so visibly upset, I think that's part of the reason why we were released. Not that we had any reason to be stopped in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's why that we didn't get hassled so much, or as bad as other people got hassled.
Mm-hmm.
Once we had gotten released, we talked to the Civil Liberties Association people, told them what had just happened so that they could document it as well. And when we were released, we decided that we needed to keep going west. Our original idea was to get to the convergence space because that was supposed to be a safe space for folks over the weekends.
Can you describe the
convergence space?
Where was that? Is that in Parkdale?
Yeah, in Parkdale. I didn't actually get a chance to be there. We had planned to go there, and I had called other friends of ours that were in town for the weekend, and the plan was to go to the convergence space, and then I got a phone call and said, don't go to the convergence space, it's being raided. So we decided to get as far west as we could get on the subway and met up with the partner of other friend of ours who went missing. In that time period, we had made a phone call saying that we had lost our friend and if anybody had heard from him to let us know immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And about 5 minutes after I made that phone call, I got another phone call back saying that there was video up on the media co-op site of him being taken down by five plainclothes police officers. And there's video of him up on YouTube. You can't really see his face in any of the pictures, but I think the title of the one video is police brutality, or like how to incite a riot or something. And there's a moment in there where it zooms in and there's five cops on top of this one person, and one cop's just like beating shots into the side of this guy on the ground, and that's my friend just getting systematically abused by the police.
Yeah. The police have room to use good judgment as to whether or not to be as brutal as they are in the moment.
Yeah, well, like, police are humans too, right? Like, they all have brains just like the rest of us.
So it's not just, they can't just use the excuse that it's their job.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And from what I saw on the weekend, you could see that there were some officers that were visibly disturbed by what was happening. Like, you could see on their face that they were upset with what was happening.
You mean the behavior of the police?
I think it was the behavior of the police, because anything that I saw was not actions done by the demonstrators or protesters, activists, whatever you want to call people on the streets. Anything that I saw was not done by those people. It was all...
Any abuse
that any abuse was...
Perpetrated by...
it was started by the police. Like, when you've got... you know, four lines of riot cops on every side of you, and they're ready to battle, and you're, like, just standing on the street in, like, shorts and a t-shirt, and you've got a backpack, And if you're lucky, you've got like a vinegar-soaked handkerchief, like
that. That like, hasn't been confiscated.
Yeah, yet. Like, I don't know what they expect people to feel. Like, that's not safe if you're in that space. Like, you've got people with weapons, like lethal weapons. I don't care if they call them less lethal weapons. People die because of, you know, getting punched. So, like, you're walking around with guns and batons, and you've got all this army gear on, and you've got, like, horses all decked out and like, protection. Like, that does not make people on the streets feel safe. It's, like, immediately rises tensions. Immediately. Like, it has to. It's just self-preservation. Yeah. Once we had gotten out, like, west, I had called my brother to let him know that I was safe, because I had figured that, you know, the stuff that went down at the detention center would be on the news. And there were cameras everywhere, and I was right in front of the cameras. So I called my brother to let him know that I was safe and let him know what was happening. And he asked where I was, and I told him. And he said, "This is the first time that you've gone up against an authoritarian state with the force like this, and you go into hiding and back down. What are you doing? Get back out on the streets." So, like, I felt really defeated after, you know, seeing what I had saw early Sunday afternoon. And, you know, we went into hiding, and then after hearing my brother say that, I was like, you know, you're right. Like, this is exactly why I came to Toronto. So I talked it over with the friends I was with, and we decided to head back down to the detention center and participate in jail solidarity again, because there was a bike rally that had sat down on Eastern Ave. Just sat down on Eastern Ave, and we decided that we were going to go sit down on Eastern Ave and wait for more of our comrades to be released. And then we got off the, we had took the subway back down. We had taken the PATE bus down, and we got off the bus. We had driven past the three plainclothes police officers that had detained us earlier and searched my friend. But we got off like a stop after we saw them. We got down to, there were three of us at this point, and we got down to Queen and Carlaw. And just as we were about to cross the street, an unmarked black SUV pulled up beside us, and four uniformed police officers surrounded us. And again, we asked if we were being arrested or detained, and they said that we were being investigated, asked if we were free to go. They said no. They told us to take our bags off and that they were being searched. They said that we didn't consent to the search, and they said, "Too bad." Again, the friend that I was with earlier that afternoon, he had three police officers on him again. And we were with another girl at this time who was left alone pretty much. I was pulled aside by the remaining police officer, and I was asked, as my friend's bag was being emptied, he had some black clothing in his bag and like goggles and a handkerchief. I was pulled aside by this police officer, and he asked my name. I told him, and he said, "You know, you've got to be honest with me. What's going on here?" And I said, "He's a fucking medic. Like, what do you want?" And he's like, "Well, you don't come to protests with stuff like this unless you're gonna cause trouble." And I mentioned that on the Saturday I had seen CUPE, who had organized this union, the labor rally, handing out preparedness kits with like earplugs and handkerchiefs and like a vinegar solution. So I had mentioned that I had seen these preparedness kits given out by the unions, and the police officer told me that I should stay away from these people. And I said, "Unions? Did you just tell me to stay away from CUPE?" And he kind of looked at me, and I was like, "You know that's your union, right?" And he just kind of looked at me and kind of looked a little confused. And then I had read an article the night before in Now magazine about how to come prepared for a G20 protest, and it had said to bring like handkerchiefs and vinegar and earplugs and like to bring all this stuff. And there was a Now magazine rack there, and I pointed and I was like, "If you pick up that magazine and read to like page 4, you're gonna see that like everything that I have in my bag is in that magazine." And he just went on about how, you know, you don't come with this stuff. If you're a peaceful protester, you don't have this stuff.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and then the other girl that we were with, who was kind of being left alone, kind of piped up and said, "Well, you know, if you were in our position, like, and you were faced with all this weaponry, like, would you not want to come with some sort of protection. Like, you guys are dressed to the nines in protection. And, like, do you really expect us to run around on the streets without any sort of protection? And he just kept saying that, you know, if we're not there to cause trouble, then we don't need this stuff, and peaceful protesters don't need stuff. And I was like, well, last night, like, people at Novotel Hotel were, like, just rounded up and, like, arrested with no cause. And that, you know, protesters are sometimes not allowed to leave the areas that you're in. And he told me that, you know, there's always a way out for protesters to go, and he knows how police force works, and if people want to leave,
so
then they can leave. Yeah, no, I swear that police officers do not know the law. Like, that guy that got arrested Saturday night and wasn't read his rights and had the Palestinian headscarf, I was told by his arresting officer that if you had your face covered during, that was illegal. So I asked him if I was wearing a raincoat with the hood up and it tight closed, if that was against the law, and he told me yes. Like, I swear that they do not know the rules, because, he told me to go.
They choose to
follow the ones that they want at the time that suits them best. And then, like, blatantly lie to citizens, like,
oh, for sure.
Blatantly lie. And, like, you can kind of tell when people are lying too, right? If you pay attention to human beings at all. And you can tell when, like, they know they're lying and they're lying to you. Like, I don't see how that's supposed to have trust with people that are supposed to protect you.
Thank you so much,
thank you.
Kristen.